Remarks of the President, Grand Rapids, Michigan, 30 October 1952.
Again. This is the first time I've had a chance to come to Michigan in this campaign, and I certainly am enjoying it. No one comes here to Grand Rapids who can fail to think of your late townsman and Senator Arthur Vandenberg. I hope you will permit me to speak about him. You see, I knew him very well for years, and he was a good friend of mine. And I had his help and counsel many times. I miss him very much. We all have cause to miss him. That is what I wish to talk to you about today. Despite his tragic and untimely death last year, Arthur Vandenberg is still a great figure of importance in this campaign. What he did for the Republicans in his last and best years, and what the Republicans did without his wise counsel and advice after he passed on, illustrates one of the most vital of all issues in this election. This is the issue of peace and war. At the close of World War II, we helped to set up the United Nations and tried to work with all our wartime allies to build a lasting peace. But the Kremlin started its Cold War against the free world. And this country, to our everlasting credit, took up that challenge, assumed leadership of the free nations, and organized the free world in strong resistance to the threat from Moscow. Korea marks the greatest test, the most important landmark, in all that we have done to hold and counter Soviet imperialism. The free world met that test, as it had never had the will or courage to meet the Japanese aggression in Manchuria or Hitler's march into Austria. We've stopped aggression in Korea and hurled it back. We've done it there, so we will not be forced to do it somewhere else on a larger scale and closer to home. We are fighting in Korea, so we will not have to fight in Wichita or San Francisco or Grand Rapids, Michigan. We've been building up the free world's strength to hold the communists, secure the peace, and to prevent another world war. As long as Senator Vandenberg was with us, he was a tower of strength, a leader and a counselor at every step of this great enterprise. He saw what we were up against right from the start. He knew we must have strong friends and allies all around the world to prevent the communists from starting another world war and to help fight them if they were rash enough to start that world war. He knew this was the only way to safeguard the freedom and to save American lives. Because of his leadership, a majority of the Republicans in Congress voted for the Greek-Turkish aid program in 1947. Because of his leadership, a majority of the Republicans voted for the Marshall Plan in 1948. Because of the leadership of Arthur Vandenberg, a majority of the Republicans voted for the North Atlantic Treaty in 1949. Senator Vandenberg was a great Republican leader. The importance of his leadership is most clearly demonstrated by what happened as soon as illness forced him to withdraw his guiding hand. My friends, from that time onward, the Republican Party in Congress has gone backwards into the hands of the old guard isolationists who always hated Vandenberg and made haste to reverse the whole direction of his work. Look at the record. If there's anything that Senator Vandenberg stood for and believed in, it is our alliance with the North Atlantic countries and our programs of economic and military aid to help them. Yet most of the present leaders of the Republicans in Congress have now turned against these programs and vote time after time to hamper and to cripple them. Their usual technique, of course, is to attack the funds required to carry out these vital programs. Here are some examples. In 1950, more than four-fifths of the Republican senators voted two separate times for serious cuts in the Marshall Plan. In 1951, Republican senators voted overwhelmingly six separate times to cripple economic aid for Europe and to slash military aid. Their colleagues in the House did exactly the same thing. In 1952, this year, mind you, three-fourths of the Republican senators and nine-tenths of the Republican congressmen voted for most dangerous slashes in economic and military aid to the free nations of Europe. This is the record of the Republican Party without Senator Vandenberg. By these votes, they have sought to undermine in actual operation the policies that he helped to create. In this way, they have repudiated his leadership. Yet these are the men who come before the country now, asking that this nation's future and the whole world's hope for peace be placed in their hands for four long years. And what of the leader of their so-called crusade? Has he supported the great principles of the bipartisan foreign policy? Until this summer, he was the supreme commander in Europe under the North Atlantic Treaty. I appointed him to that job. In that capacity, he was charged with carrying out an important part of our effort to build a solid system of mutual security. Now, early this year, I sent down to the Congress a carefully considered budget for this vital task. Quite naturally, in considering my request, congressional committees sought out the views of the Supreme Commander in Europe. They asked for his opinion on the sum I had requested, and they also asked his views on the effect of cuts in that amount. He sent them word that a reduction of as much as $1 billion would be heavily and seriously felt. He also stated, and I quote, "Any cut, material or greater than this, would create such difficulties that a drastic revision of the whole program might be indicated and might therefore endanger the proposed military buildup, which I consider essential in the interest of the United States security." That's a direct quote from the testimony before the committee. Yet, with that warming clear before them, the Republicans in Congress, aided by a few backward-looking Democrats, proceeded to slash not one, but nearly $2 billion from the funds I had requested. The Supreme Commander did not protest. He said not a word. Instead, he came home to run for the Republican nomination for president. And after he became the nominee, he promptly endorsed for re-election those senators and congressmen who had ignored his warnings and slashed the funds that were essential for the enterprise he'd led in Europe. Now, this man recently came to Michigan and wrapped himself in Arthur Vandenberg's mantle and called himself a Vandenberg Republican. He rode across your state extolling the policies of Vandenberg that he himself had believed in and worked for. Then he went to Illinois, where Bertie McCormick and Senator Dirksen reign over the Republican Party. And there, he sneered at these same policies and talked like an isolationist. If he was a Vandenberg Republican in Michigan, he most surely was a Dirksen-Taft-McCormick Republican in Illinois. The Republican candidate asks that he be made the leader of our country. But in politics, my friends, just as in the Army, a leader should lead. He talks of Arthur Vandenberg, but in this whole campaign, he has not displayed an ounce of leadership such as Vandenberg exerted every day. My friends, I am convinced that it would be most dangerous to our hopes of peace if this country were turned over to a man like that and to the party he now represents. Above all, you will vote to send to the White House a man who has proved by his record and by his conduct in this campaign that he possesses wisdom and courage of his convictions and real understanding of the problems of world leadership in these troubled times, and that's Adlai Stevenson of Illinois. Now, I want to point out something to you. I want to point out something to you people here. I went out on this campaign with a simple purpose of getting people like you to think. I want you to hear Eisenhower carefully. I want you to be courteous to him. I want you to know the issues. I want you to think about those issues. That's the only reason I'm here. I want you to study the record in the Congress of the Republicans, and that's the only way you can find out what the policy of the Republican Party will be should they get control of the government. You must consider the welfare of the free world. You must consider the welfare of the greatest republic the sun has ever shone on. You must reject the leadership of the isolationists and the reactionaries. You must vote instead for the party that has worked steadfastly to build a strong America and a strong free world. You will choose Blair Moody for your senator. You will choose Menin Williams for your governor, and you'll choose Vincent O'Neill for your congressman. You'll send Adlai Stevenson to the White House, and the country will be safe for another 4 years.